Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I am a DJ.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up later on the show, Sicilian tenor Salvatore Licitra talks to us about subbing for Pavarotti and doing double duty at the Met. But right now, the news continues to be bleak for album lovers. In 2006, album sales plunged another 5%, while sales of digital tracks shot up 65%. Now, critics have been declaring the death of the album for years. But if the album is indeed on the way out, is that really such a bad thing for music fans? Today we debate the merits and the future of the album format. Joining us first is Caroline Sullivan. She's pop critic for The Guardian and joins us on the phone from London. Caroline, there seems to be general agreement that the album as a format is in trouble. Do you think it should be saved?
Well, my personal take on this is... The faster it goes, the better. I've always been very much a single person ever since I was a kid and started buying records. I have very, very few albums in my collection. I've been collecting for 25 years.
Well, so what kind of critic are you that doesn't have, like, wall-to-wall albums at home?
Well, I listen to tons of music because I get sent virtually everything that comes out in Britain. I'm sent virtually every album that comes out, and I listen to it all, but... in the long run, I'll only keep about 7 or 8 of those every year because I know that I'm not going to listen to most of them again.
So is it a case of, you know, you listen to the record and maybe there's a track that you'd like to sort of keep, but you don't want to have to take the whole thing and find room for it in the house?
Well, that's exactly it, and I think a lot of other people are agreeing with me, hence the popularity of downloading. And as we all know, when people download, they tend to cherry-pick a few tracks rather than download the entire album, and it just goes to show that most albums in their entirety aren't particularly worth listening to.
So for you and for people of like minds, the silver lining to the death of the album is the golden age, a new golden age of the single, I guess.
Well, I hope so. I really do.
So why do you think people keep making albums?
I think it's because albums are considered the gold standard of the music industry. If you join a band or if you're a singer on your own, you've probably grown up with the idea that you need to release a full body of work in the shape of an album or else you're not going to be taken seriously. Or if you're a particularly pretentious band like Radiohead, you'll think that releasing a single just doesn't do justice to your art. You know, you have to be able to expand in the form of 12 or 13 songs.
Okay, so Caroline, you're not first online when Radiohead tickets go on sale, I take it.
I've spent years criticizing them in print.
Well, when we covered the so-called Jack and Pop polls at the end of 2006, many American critics seemed to side with you, Caroline, because Crazy, the single from Gnarls Barkley, made almost everybody's top 10 list, but the album that it came from, Saint Elsewhere, did not. And so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much. Does Crazy make an album great? Well, for the album Saint Elsewhere, perhaps not. Crazy was at the top of many critics' top 10 lists. The album did considerably not as well. Fractured English there. Sorry about that. But Caroline Sullivan's on the phone with us from London. She's pop critic for The Guardian. And joining us now, our old friend Anne Powers, music critic for the LA Times, joining us from the LA Times newsroom. So, Anne, Caroline says that if the album's dying, it can't happen quickly enough for her. What about you? What do you think?
Well, John, I have a different point of view. I mean, I love great singles, and I do think in the case of the Gnarls Barkley album, there's a it's a case of a couple great songs and a few maybe misguided choices, but I think the album is a form that we shouldn't condemn. It will become only one. It has become only one way that musical artists, express themselves. But I think there is definitely a niche, maybe several niches, in which the album still functions as a very important tool. And you know, there'll be singles bands and album bands, as there actually have been for the entire history of pop.
Right, for decades. I mean, yeah. ever since Frank Sinatra's concept records in the 1950s, I suppose.
Very good point. Everybody says Sgt. Pepper was the first, but there were, of course, pop and jazz artists who did. I mean, look at John Coltrane, Miles Davis, you know, I mean, yeah. Doing these incredible albums. So, I mean, I hear Caroline, we are waiting. My husband, who's also a music critic, and I are waiting to get rid of these 6,000 CDs we have in our basement, because then maybe we'll know what color our walls are. You know?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But I disagree with her that everyone who downloads only wants singles, in that, for example, The Shins, who just released an album that did very well in the American charts, 30% of the album sales that week, when they were number two on the charts, were downloads.
Right.
So people are downloading whole albums.
They are hitting that download all button.
They are.
Okay. Now, your article, Anne, in the LA Times, suggests three different routes by which the album format might continue to be something of use for us.
Absolutely.
Why don't you run us through those three?
Well, the first is sort of for people like Caroline who prefer singles. Great collections of singles. I mean, the first few Beatles records were basically that.
Mm-hmm.
The first few Rolling Stones records, even Elvis, early Elvis records, you know, you'd want to hear every track. They're all pitched at a certain sort of radio-ready, very poppy quality. So that's great for the big mainstream acts, and I think that you will see more and more of that, less filler, more pressure on very, very established artists, or very mainstream artists, rather, commercial artists.
So for example, Fall Out Boy.
Yeah, Fall Out Boy was my example. I think they're kind of going the hip-hop route and trying to do as many great singles. And for those artists, you know, the album will just be sort of like a carrying case.
Mm-hmm.
I think Steve Jobs making this announcement, or trying to, you know, turn the iPod into the new carrying case to sell disposable iPods that will be, like, packed with one album on them, which is sort of, that might be the future, you know? You'll be in the airport, you'll buy your Fall Out Boy iPod and listen to it on the plane. The next idea.
All right, well, before you get to the next one, okay. Caroline, let me ask you there in London to weigh in. What do you? I mean, if the album is full, as Anne suggests, of great singles, does that album make it to the wall at home?
do you know what? I would say about 65% of my collection is actually greatest hits albums. I've got lots and lots of stuff by people like The Clash and The Beach Boys and Stevie Wonder, but it's their greatest hits. I don't want the actual studio albums. I'm not interested.
Okay. And back to you, the second way that the LP might be preserved.
This is sort of for more what I call a mid-list pop artist, which is sort of the equivalent of a mid-list writer. In other words, someone who's writing for maybe for a more literary audience, a more nichified audience. Radiohead, Caroline's Bette Noir, might be the most popular of all of these kinds of bands. But these artists actually would do well to release connected suites of songs, which you could call albums or something else, in that their fans are they're invested in the artist. They want a lengthier, more intense listening experience. And so I love the new Bloc Party record, and it's a great example of one. They're a band out of the UK who made... It's not a concept album in a heavy way, but all the songs are connected to the theme of modernity and living in the city. And it's a great long listening experience.
This is an excerpt from the brand new Bloc Party record, the song called Hunting for Witches. All right, that's the brand new Bloc Party record. I have to confess, I did hit the download all button for this one. Caroline Sullivan is pop critic for The Guardian in London, and Ann Power is music critic for the LA Times in the LA Times newsroom. Both of them with us on Soundcheck today, talking about the future, if any, of the album as a format. Two routes to preserving the LP, down, one to go. What would that be?
Well, I guess I call these like the process artists. So, in this route, the album is somewhat arbitrary in that these artists, like the Arcade Fire was my big example, but there are others like Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah. Their music, it seems, and it is, very spontaneous, very oriented toward, if not improvisation, a very loose feel, mm-hmm. like kind of jammy in a weird way, but it's not necessarily like the Grateful Dead. But the point is, an album feels like kind of an hour in which you walked into their studio or something, you know?
Right.
You feel that these bands are always creating, that there's no pause in their creative process, and the album is just kind of a slice of their life. And I think for these bands, they might be the most experimental eventually in terms of the formats they will use, and we'll see lots of different forms, whether it's long form song suites or maybe just weird live experiments. Or they're not single fans though,
right.
So they'll need to find some form.
Well, let's hear a little bit. The Arcade Fire's new record isn't out yet, not for another month or so, but here's one of the tracks called Black Mirror. Band Arcade Fire, their much-anticipated new record is out in March. That song is called Black Mirror and will be on it. And Ann Powers, the chief pop music critic of the LA Times, suggesting Arcade Fire is one of the bands who will revive the album form by all but abandoning it, to quote her article there in the Times. We're also speaking with Caroline Sullivan, pop critic for The Guardian in London, and I suspect, Caroline, that if you like the Arcade Fire record, you'd probably be taking just Black Mirror and consigning the rest of the CD to oblivion somewhere.
Well, that's probably what I'd do. But I have to. But of course, I don't like the Arcade Fire because they're not a singles band. I can actually. I realize that there are some bands whose music just isn't really adaptable to the 3-minute format, and I can actually see the point of a band like the Arcade Fire for other listeners. What I'm talking about is those bands that are somewhere in the middle, not particularly arty, but not massive singles bands either, the ones who just kind of like sit in the middle. Block Party is a really good example over here. I don't like listening to their singles, but I don't really want to hear the whole album either, and I don't really see where they sit
in the great
scheme of things.
Yeah, as Anne says, maybe you just don't like Block Party at the end of the day.
That probably is. Got that in a nutshell.
And despite, listing these kind of three possible ways to preserve the album format, you also write that the last album that felt like it might change something was the White Stripes record, White Blood Cells. That was almost 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Did it actually change anything?
Well, I guess the reason I said that was because I feel that and this has to do with so many more things than the album format. It has to do with the acceleration of media and the shifting in the music industry. But sort of bands, artists who feel like their work is an event, it's harder to make your work feel like an event now because, A, things get superseded so quickly. Artists get superseded so quickly. It's like, look at, in England, for example, there's all these young women singers who are so interesting, Lily Allen mm-hmm. and Corinne Bailey Rae, and now there's Amy Winehouse, and it's like every week there's a new one, and how does anybody get any legs to actually feel important? So I feel that what the White Stripes had was they had a strong enough vision and sort of concept that they could feel like they would last more than 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And they also could feel like people committed to them, fans committed to them. I feel that fans have grown extremely fickle. And I don't think you have to be into albums to commit to. You could be totally a singles person like Caroline and still commit to someone like, I don't know, Kylie or, a very poppy artist and just love them and love every single they did. But right now there's a very strong sense of fickleness, I think, among fans and among the media. That's a little sad. I mean, it drains a little bit of the passion out of listening and loving music.
Yeah. Caroline, critics have been talking about the death of albums for years, but, I mean, these things go in cycles, don't they? I mean, you know, in the 60s, for a while, it was all about the 45, the single.
Oh, yeah.
And then with Sgt. Pepper, it became something else.
Then with the advent of psychedelia, then it became all about the album. And then in the 70s, suddenly it was disco, and singles were really important again. And it is very cyclical, and I think that at the moment, and of course during Britpop over here, which I don't think ever translated to America, it was all about singles. But at the moment, in this country, we actually seem to be in a little bit of a trough in between those two poles.
So
I have to. Can I interject and
sure.
say something about disco, because I know something about that history. I co-curated an exhibit on disco at Experience Music Project in Seattle. And disco was oriented in some ways around singles, but actually, disco producers were really into making concept albums. They, you know, some of the most complex, lengthy, heady compositions of the pop era came from people like Cerrone. I think he was an Italian producer who's just kind of a nutcase who made these crazy science fiction epics. Even the Village People, in a strange way, were a concept band making concept albums, and Donna Summer's work
with Giorgio Moroder.
Yeah. Those were albums. So,
but can I just interject something here? I just think that when you think back to disco or any other strong singles period, those 3-minute bursts of music really crystallized what was happening in music then. I mean, whereas the albums were just gravy. I mean, the albums were what you listened to if you were really curious about
right.
the artist. But it was all about those little kind of almost grenades of sound, which really summed up an era. And when you look back now on disco, you think of Donna Summer doing "Love to Love You, Babe." You don't think about Cerrone or Van McCoy or any of the albums that were done in that period, do you?
Well, I don't know.
Van McCoy, oh my God.
What I'm saying is that those singles wouldn't have existed without the albums, because the artists were motivated to think in a broader way. So.
Although, Anne, I can recall getting a lot of, working in radio at the time, as a student, getting the 12-inch singles way before the records.
That's different than a 3-minute burst of sound, though. I mean, which is actually another interesting development that's happening again. Longer songs, song suites. We've talked about this before, you know, 12-minute Joanna Newsom compositions or Decemberist songs that go on for 15 or 16 minutes. Artists are feeling very free to experiment, and I think that's incredibly healthy, and, you know, that we may not have albums or old-fashioned singles at some point, or we may have all of it, but
mm-hmm.
including this, like, 15-minute thing, that will be a whole different phenomenon.
Well, there's a very young guy who's just beginning to break in England named Jamie T.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I wish I could play some of his music on the radio, but I can't. Despite
you
which, it is.
You probably wouldn't be able to understand the accent anyway.
Oh, you can understand way more than we would want people to understand. But it's great stuff. And it right now is available to people just, you know, through digital media. So there's a whole new access for listeners
right.
To MySpace pages and videos and stuff, which the artist controls.
Right.
And the artist controls whether it's all of his songs or just a couple of hits or you know, it seems like this guy at the age of 21 has really already, before his first album hits, taken ownership of how people get to his music.
Right, and LCD Sound System did a 45-minute single song, too, last year. So it's definitely something that I think artists that are open to sort of new forms, like guitar bands aren't necessarily pioneering this, there are some, but definitely electronic music, dance-oriented music is one realm where this really works well. Lily Allen was just sort of touting Jamie T to me the other day when I interviewed her. So, yeah, look for him soon.
All right. Ann Powers is chief pop music critic for the LA Times. Caroline Sullivan, pop critic for The Guardian in London. And Caroline, I have to say that if our listener mail is any indication, the emails coming in, it sounds like there's a lot of people out there who still think the album is the way to go and that you lose something by not giving those deeper tracks a chance to grow on you. So we'll see. They have room enough for everybody, right?
I'll be proved right eventually.
I'm a Caroline fan, though, even if I don't agree with her on this.
All right, well, yeah, Caroline, and good to speak with both of you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Still to come on Soundcheck today, Salvatore Licitra. He's the Energizer Bunny of opera, filling in on a moment's notice for Pavarotti some years ago, singing with a torn rotator cuff, and now taking on two operas in a single night. He joins us in just a couple of minutes on Soundcheck.